Hi, you are listening to the Conflict and Development in Africa podcast. This podcast is for policymakers, governments, researchers, students, businesses, and anyone that is interested in conflict and development issues in Africa. On this podcast, we hear from experts from across Africa and the world. Your host, Dr. Michael Wangpa, will ask the questions you would want answers to. Michael Wangpa has an extensive experience spanning over a decade studying, researching, writing, and consulting on conflict and development issues in Africa.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Conflict and Development in Africa podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Michael Wangpa. Today we're going to be looking at the recent increase in Saudi engagement in Africa. I am joined by a very special guest, Semaya Bachaya. I hope I've pronounced that well. Bachaya is an associate fellow at Observer Research Foundation and is also currently pursuing his PhD research. Semaya, it is a pleasure to have you join me today, and I look forward to a wonderful conversation between us.
Thank you. Thank you, Michael, for having me here. I'm Sami Bhattacharya. I work in Observer Research Foundation. It's the premier think tank in India based in New Delhi. And we work on foreign policy and national security issues. And here, my job is to look after our Africa work. So thank you again. And I'm excited to be part of this discussion today.
Thank you very much for expanding the Observer Research Foundation does. So let's start off. So we've seen in recent times, Africa is becoming critical in the geopolitical competition around the world. And we've seen actors coming into Africa, besides the traditional actors that we know, the Western nations. We saw an expansion in interest. And Saudi happens to be one of the latest actors that is taking interest in Africa. What is behind this Saudi interest, and what are the factors driving this interest? Let's start from that first.
Sure. So actually your question has two parts. So first part is the increasing interest in Africa. So I would agree with you that the number of the interest on Africa that and world leaders are showing, different world leaders are showing, that's very visible. As we can see, there are a number of Africa plus multilateral events are coming up. You see, you had Japan, you had China, you had US, you had EU, but now many traditional, beyond these traditional players, there are countries like Saudi Arabia, as you rightfully mentioned. And also, for example, Saudi Arabia, apart from Saudi Arabia, South Korea also had a first Africa plus one event last year. Then you had Russia, which started in 2019, and then they already followed it up with 2023 Russia-Africa Summit. You have India, my country, we have had already 3 India-Africa Summit, and now probably we'll have another this year, sometime end of this year. So among all these players, there is another area, another region, which is emerging, one that is very close geographically to Africa, and that was, although the connection was always there, but this Gulf countries, which is very just near the Horn of Africa, they are also taking increasing interest in Africa. The countries like you have UAE, you have Turkey, you have Saudi, you have Iran. Although the first Africa summit, there was an Arab Africa summit long time ago, sometime in 1970s. But now first Africa summit, Africa plus one summit, that was done by Qatar. But now, increasingly, I would say that UAE, Turkey, Saudi and Iran. These four are the major Gulf players, Middle Eastern players that are showing their activities in Africa. Now this events are not why the question is how and why Saudi is taking interest in Africa. Now this is not a very separate event from what is going on around the world. You see, there is an interesting shift going on in the world, a shift where Saudi Arabia is emerging as an important player in the global landscape. You see, Saudi has last year, it has joined, it is a very important partner of USA. So it already has a very pro-West stance, but it is already, last year it joined BRICS, a global grouping led by several global South players like India, China, Brazil, and Russia, and South Africa. So it shows Saudi's intention to be, to expand, to diversify. Also in 2016, the year after the Crown Prince, his father, when in 2015 he came to power, in 2016, Saudi launched this Vision 2030. So Vision 2030, an important part of Vision 2030 is to expand its, diversify its economy, expand its partnership. Now, if you want to diversify your economy, you want to expand your partnership, what better place than Africa? So I think Africa is a very important part of its Vision 2030, and this is visible the way Saudi is engaging with Africa more and more through different channels.
Yes, very, very interesting. So we there seems to be the notion that there is a scramble for Africa, and in that scramble we first have to look at it historically and say the first is Africa's relationship with traditional external partners has always been in an extractive way, where Africa is seen as providing the raw materials. And this has always been an unequal relationship. But with this expansion of partners, it provides, and then again, I'll look at within what is going on in the Sahel and the anti-French revolution, French, you know, receding from the continent, providing opportunity for this new partners. So would you say with these new partners, and let's focus on Saudi as well, what kind of relationship do you think they're going to have? Is it going to be one that is different from the previous relationship where we saw a scramble, where it was an unequal relationship between Africa and this people that were coming in for the relationship?
Sure. See, the word scramble, I would really not use this word, because when the scramble take place in Germany with von Bismarck leading that meeting, it was more like six European players. They are dividing Africa based on their geopolitical interest. There was no African present in that meeting, and there was no African say. Now the scene is reversed. It is... Now the scene is reversed. It is African countries are increasingly being courted by European players, traditional European players, but as well as several emerging countries, emerging nations. So now, but Africa has a bigger say in this. Right now, it is no more. There is an African agency, important African agency. So yes, it is probably because of that colonial structure, Africa could not develop the way proper industrialization. Africa does not. Africa still lacks the human capacity to develop its, to lead its industrialization. So there is still a dependency on these countries, and for that reason, when you say that yes, Africa has to export raw materials, Africa has to. It is still in the value chain. It is still at the lower rank. But it is really because Africa does not. It is not because there is a scramble going on. It is because Africa does not have that capacity. And I think what African leaders, many African countries are already doing. For example, you see in Namibia, Namibia is rich in Namibia and Zimbabwe, they're rich in lithium. Now they have, they used to export lithium and it used to get processed in other countries. But now Namibia has said that you cannot take our raw lithium. You have to, basic processing has to be done in the country. Even basic processing, I would say it's not a very big deal, but at least it is moving up the ladder of value chain. And I'm sure going forward, there will be more and more, efforts like made in Africa, or, at least some part of the value chain must remain in Africa, the manufacturing process. But for that, Africa needs to, there are a lot of infrastructural needs. There is a need for energy. For example, we spoke about, I was just speaking about critical minerals, processing of lithium, for example. We are living in the fourth industrial revolution, and Africa has a lot of critical minerals. And the whole world is scrambling the way you described. The whole world is fighting for African minerals. Africa can get rich out of it. But for that, Africa needs to process, move up the value chain. They need a good energy supply to process them. Africa needs good roads infrastructure, port infrastructure. Every African country have that infrastructure? Unfortunately, not. So till that time, Africa does not develop its own infrastructure, it will remain, the dependency will remain. But I would really not say it as a scramble, because even in this dependency, there is a very strong African agency. Africa has this is apparent, this is very visible when Africa has the choice to choose its partners. So for example, some countries are doing their business with China, while some are doing with USA, some are choosing India in different sectors, depending on which country is ahead in which field. So yeah, I really don't think it's a scramble.
Yeah, I agree with you completely. And I like that you mentioned China. And one of the distinction that people have drawn, scholars and observers have drawn, between former colonial European or Western or US relationship with Africa, which is more kind of like age dependency, and partners like China, especially China, is one where you could see clearly the visible impact in terms, you mentioned infrastructural deficit in Africa, and how China, under its Belt and Road Initiative, is, has partnered and creating the right infrastructure. So if I look at China, how do we see, there's another aspect I'm going to come to, but let me first look at the economic and infrastructure. You rightly mentioned as well, Africa inabilities because of its poor infrastructure. So how is Saudi plugging into that? And how is it going to compete with the Belt and Road Initiative of China?
Sure. So I really don't think the amount there is a competition. So between BRI and Saudi or any other players. See, Africa has had a very big infrastructure deficit. And while the Western countries helped or tried to help, there were always certain conditionalities, like you have to, we will pay you, do this, but in if you do that, if you want our money, you have to do XYZ. And many African countries did not like, especially those countries which were ruled by autocratic leaders or military juntas, they really did not like those conditionalities. There came China. China said, okay, you take my money, you give us back with easier loan conditions. Sometimes you may also call it checkbook diplomacy. You can call it debt trap diplomacy, because many a times African leaders don't even know how to pay them back, China back, but they are taking those money and they are using it for their infrastructure building. So, but because they were giving it without any condition, so China became very popular, and China became probably the number one today. There is undoubtedly China is the number one infrastructure partner in Africa, and there is no way Saudi or any other country for that matter in the short term can compete with China. Now, Saudi as a country, it has developed a lot of expertise. It has, for example, its partner UAE. UAE is a very, very, very advanced in port infrastructure, the DP world. It is very ahead in port infrastructure. It has built more ports in Africa than probably the China is the only competitor for UAE's DP in DP world. There is no other country that can compete on port infrastructure. But Saudi has different other expertise. Saudi has other expertise, and these expertise are Saudi wants to use those expertise in Africa. For example, it can be mineral processing. It can be they have the Saudi Aramco. They have a very good experience of in the petrol and oil sector. So they can use those experience in construction sector. Saudi is very ahead in construction. So these are the experience Saudi wants to take it to Africa. But there is no competition. I'm sure that Saudi has no competition in mind with China or any other country. It is more like there are gaps, and let's fill that gap.
You mentioned something that I wanted to briefly speak on. One of the relationship, we keep mentioning this, but we can't escape it, with Western partners is the debt burden. And one of the things that Saudi, I think with this Vision 2030, is canvassing for is also to relieve Africa of that debt burden. Can you speak on that?
Surely. See, Saudi has realized that African countries are very much in debt. Africa, so Saudi, there are, so for example, through this, through, I mean, country has a very good GDP per capita. The country has through its oil, petrodollar, it has additional resources. So Saudi grants, there are funds that Saudi grants to Africa through, for example, Saudi Fund for Development. And it was created sometime in 1975, and 52% or more, almost 50% or more than 50% of that fund is dedicated to Africa. Then apart from SFD, you have also this Islamist Development Bank. Saudi has a lot of say in that Islamist Development Bank. And through this Islamic Development Bank, Saudi grants lot of funds to different African countries, particularly Islam countries. For example, Sudan. For example, in Horn of Africa, Sudan is Africa's Saudi's a very big partner. Then, if you go to West Africa, you have Mali, you have Mauritania. These are the countries, and Saudi also understands the need of African countries that are stuck in debt. In 2020, when Saudi was chairing the G20, Saudi introduced this something called, they called for this suspension of African debt. And they actually, during that meeting, the finance minister of Saudi, Mohammed Al-Zadan, he said that we are working out on different mechanisms to help African countries repay those debt. And probably the follow-up of that was when in the last year G20, when India was chairing, we launched this G20 debt payment initiative. But I think Saudi was one of the countries that speak on Africa's behalf for this the concern of debt.
You mentioned the Horn of Africa and how the competition with the Gulf countries and Saudi. You mentioned Sudan. There are also other countries in the Horn of Africa where, again, Saudi's interest in Africa is not just development resources. It's also about, because one of the things that is standing as a stumbling block or obstacle in Africa is the conflict, prevalence of conflict. So and Saudi's vision to just look at being involved in peace and security development. But how does his involvement in conflict on Sudan and other zone, does it complicate? Does it, in a way, where we see UAE and other Gulf countries as well, contributing maybe directly or indirectly to the prolongment of conflict in those places? So what is the role of Saudi in those conflict on zone in terms of peace and security, or escalating or de-escalating the conflict in Sudan and the Horn of Africa?
Sure. So as I said, Saudi is a relatively late entrant compared to UAE, for example, in Africa. Mm-hmm. And a lot of investment that Saudi has done, particularly on agriculture, on energy, it is in Sudan. So it is in Saudi's interest that peace comes back in Sudan. So Saudi is and will be doing everything that is possible so that there is a peace in Sudan and Saudi can do its business. Now, interestingly, you evoked also UAE. So if you see in Sudan or overall in general, Saudi and UAE interest was always it converged. Particularly Sudan, the Sudanese government under Omar al-Bashir, both Saudi and UAE were friends. And in Yemen, when Houthi rebels started their revolt, then Saudi and UAE together, they paid Sudan, so they don't have, Sudan exported the manpower to fight Houthi rebels in Yemen. And very particularly, those are the RSF, the paramilitary group in Sudan, which was contracted for the fight against Houthi. And in fact, it is in Yemen, these people got training and they got armed and they got they did their capacity building, and now they came back and they are fighting against these Sudanese armed force, the national government, which is led by Burhan. But what happened eventually, the interest in Sudan between Saudi and UAE, there is a break between these two countries. Now UAE, Saudi, which thinks that Burhan-led government will be more positive, conducive to Saudi's interest. So both Saudi and Egypt, there are more convergence in Saudi and Egypt interest in Sudan. Saudi and Egypt both are supporting Burhan government, while UAE UAE looks like it is supporting the government, the parallel paramilitary group of RSF. And in the Sudanese government is very recently, last month only, they went to ICJ also against UAE. Now Saudi wants to be part of this conflict resolution mechanism. Saudi when you do a conflict resolution, conflict mediation, it increases your influence. So in very recently, we are seeing that Middle Eastern countries like Qatar, like Turkey did a mediation between Ethiopia and Somalia. Similarly, UAE is also trying to do mediation. So Saudi is President Donald Trump said that Russia and Ukraine will be doing their talk in Saudi, and then Qatar also very recently did some surprise mediation between Congo and Rwanda. So Saudi wants to remain a very important player. It is an opportunity for Saudi not only to bring peace in Sudan, but also to show its importance in the global geopolitics by doing the mediation between these two parties. And Saudi is called a Middle Eastern Quad, like with US. It has tried several times to bring peace between these two warring factions, warring generals in Sudan, but unfortunately none of them worked so far.
We've seen, you rightly assessed how the Gulf countries or the Middle East countries are becoming very important in mediating, you know, warring parties. We've recently seen the negotiation between Russia and Ukraine, like you mentioned, in Saudi Arabia. But then again, we've also seen that over the years as well, the partnership between Saudi Arabia and America, for instance, have been one that is mad with criticism, where, you know, you see where in Turkey, where the journalist in Turkey was murdered in the embassy. You remember that. So there've also been accusation of human rights human rights situation with Saudi Arabia. But like Rani said, we're beginning to see this change of narratives or changing in behavior of Saudi in trying to be more liberal and diversifying. But I think my question I want to ask now is also Iran. In the past, in Africa, particularly in Africa, when we remember historically, there's competition between Iran and Saudi Arabia is more in the religious sense, where, you know, exporting of maybe Salafi ideologies, and in Iran you have the brand of Islam that they so. But now Iran is also showing interest. Do you think we might in Africa? Do you think we might see a point where there will be such competition, such adverse competition?
Sure.
Between Iran
First, your question had the first part you said is that yes, Saudi is doing a lot of liberalization. I think that part, yes, it is worth mentioning that, you know, to bring one important part of Vision 2030 is to bring more investment in Saudi. So to attract more foreign investors and also to bring more, let me remind you that the two most important holy sites of Islam, Mecca and Medina, they are both located in Saudi. So it is religious tourism, pilgrimage is a very important part of Saudi, and Saudi wants to bring in more tourists. In addition to this religious pilgrimage, so one effort you can see Saudi is building this Neom city, which is expected to bring in lot of foreign tourists. So it is in Saudi's interest. MBS wants to portray the country as the most liberal among the Islamic world. So there has been a lot of liberalization. Religious events, but when it comes to political liberalization, there was not so much. There were like political dissent. Women empowerment is also one area where Saudi government has worked a lot in most recently, and these are all creating good image of Saudi. So this part is clearly to bring in more investment, and it is very much in synchronization with Saudi's Vision 2030. Now coming to Iran is when Saudi is increasing its influence on religious sphere, it has initially it was very very focused on spreading its Wahhabi ideology, but I think more and more realizing that, you know, just spreading the Wahhabi, the ideological doctrine should not be the main. It still remains an important part of Saudi's diplomacy, but it should not be the main contention of Saudi's diplomacy. But Iran is the most important country, Islamic country dominated by Shias, and with the sanctions that for several years that American sanctions that are put on Iran needs escape. Iran needs some countries where it can invest, where it can sell its products. So Iran is also seeing Africa as they are as a continent where it can invest its money, and all these countries they are dependent on food. They are all countries where you don't have enough agricultural land. Africa is where 65% of land, agricultural land, is located. So they very clearly, the reason is the biggest reason is agriculture, the food security, and also a big market. Iran needs to earn money. They need to sell their products. Why would they sell with these American sanctions? So they are also looking at Africa. The previous prime president Raisi, before his death, he visited several African countries. But I think with this recent crisis in Gaza, Iran and in this fall of Syria, in the killing of Hezbollah, I think Iran has it forced Iran to look inward, and I think its engagement in Africa has stalled to some extent in last few months.
Okay, that's an interesting assessment. But let me go back to the economic development partnership or vision of Saudi in Africa. So how is Saudi doing this? Because Africa also has its own vision, its 2063 agenda, and has a more continental approach to, maybe in principle, is African Continental Free Trade Agreement. So how is Saudi engaging? Is Saudi engaging in a bilateral sense, or is he engaging in a multilateral sense with these African Union 2063 agenda, the African Continental Free Trade, and also the African Development Bank? Or is he just forming this partnership at the bilateral level with several countries?
Sure. So you see, the current engagement with Saudi and Africa, it is still very much dominated by, as I said, the religion. So Saudi is very much more active bilaterally. It is more active in the Muslim dominated African countries, like countries in the Maghreb, countries in the West Africa, and in Horn of Africa. So Egypt is probably Saudi's number one trading partner in Africa. With South Africa, the region, South Africa is a continental powerhouse. So with South Africa also, Saudi has a lot of business, but it is mostly doing its business with Egypt, with Mauritania, with Mali, so all, and in Horn of Africa, which is very much Muslim dominated. Now, if you see the content, Saudi exports a lot of products like rubber, chemicals, consumer goods, minerals, metals, food products. But what it imports from Africa is really still its metal, and it's mostly raw material. So Saudi has the balance of trade is still in favor of Saudi, because it sells because Africa sells only the raw materials. Now you talk about Africa Agenda 2063. So in 2023, when Saudi organized its first Saudi Africa summit, the output document of that event was Riyadh Declaration, and the first thing that Riyadh Declaration says is that the converging matters between Saudi's Vision 2030 and Africa's Agenda 2063. Saudi's diplomats, they understood very well that to realize our Vision 2030, we must support Africa in its Vision 2063. And so even the African leaders, there are more than 50 African countries present in that summit. And in that summit, MVS, the Crown Prince, he proposed something like 10 billion to finance to help Saudi companies to invest in Africa till up to 2030. He promised additional 5 billion in development financing in African countries. There were several MOUs signed on different sectors, which are very critical to Africa's Vision 2063. For example, tourism, finance, energy, investment, renewable energy, mining. So these are these information technology. So these are the sector which where Africa needs investment, and Saudi government, Saudi realized, realized that these are the sectors where we can target, which will be converging between Riyadh, Saudi Vision 2030 and Africa 2063, Africa Vision 2063. And that is how Saudi is playing very intelligently to court African countries.
Let's start to wrap up. Let's start to bring it to a close. And I wanted you to look at, so this is the question. How do you forecast the trajectory of this Saudi-African relationship in terms of economies, diplomatic relations, in the short, medium, and long term? Now, as you rightly mentioned, currently assistance, there's a trade imbalance. Saudi, seems to have more favorable stuff. How can African governments or African nations correct this imbalance and have a much more fairer relationship in terms of trade, in terms of investment moving forward? How can they change this balance?
So the answer is.
I guess my question is.
Yes, yes.
Oh, go on. Do you want me to repeat the question?
No, it's fine. It's fine. I think you want to know how this trade imbalance can be worked out and how there can be more equality in that relationship. And I think the answer lies
One. Okay. And then lastly is, how do you project in the short, medium, and long term how the relationship is going to develop and move forward in a more sustainable? What is your projection? I wanted to have a projection as well.
Sure. So I think the first part is, the answer to first part is more investment. So while Saudi has Saudi should invest a little more. This is the plan also. Saudi is planning to invest more in African infrastructure, for example, in food security, in cold storage, in manufacturing, in food processing. These are these industries where if Saudi invests, then it will help Africa to move up the value chain. It will also bring some balance in some bilateral relations between these two countries. So there are MOUs that have been signed on food processing, oil refining, mineral processing. These are the things that where Saudi really needs to invest in Africa, and Africa really needs investment. The future of Saudi Africa relations. I think one important part of one important aspect which is often ignored is that you can see is that Saudi is kind of decoupling its Africa policy from US. So there are on several occasions Saudi felt that. Be it whether during the attack of Iraq in George W. Bush time, or when Barack Obama ignored the fall of Hosni Mubarak in Egypt. These are the things which made Saudi cautious to not follow blindly US. And now Saudi is exploring its Africa policy independent of US policy. And this Russia-Ukraine crisis during that time, it also helped Saudi to realize that Saudi has made a lot of money during that time, during this crisis, because Russia could not export its oil. So now Saudi showed its independent foreign policy by inviting those coup leaders in West Africa, especially Burkina Faso, Mali, and Niger. These are the countries which are under economic sanction by US. But Saudi in their meeting, Saudi Africa summit, Saudi invited these countries. So it is kind of, I think Saudi is trying to establish a kind of it's like a non-alignment movement, Saudi-led non-alignment movement of global South. I think this is something Saudi is trying to thinking that it will help Saudi to play a bigger role in the global South, to lead the global South. So quoting Africa is an inevitable step towards that direction. I think in that way, this Saudi Africa summit was really, I mean, why out of the blue Saudi will organize a Saudi Africa event? So I think this was the motive. And then there are some words like Afro Arabia is getting famous in Saudi. Mm-hmm. So this is like Saudi's way of saying that we are the connecting bridge between the Arab world and Africa. So it is more like Turkey says that we are Afro-Eurasian country. Saudi wants to Saudi understand that there is this Arab world, there is this Africa, and there is a bridge that needs to be built. And Saudi wants to occupy. Saudi wants to win African countries by its by various dimension. It does not, economic diplomacy is definitely at the heart. It will surely remain at the heart of the Saudi Africa engagement in the coming future, but Saudi also wants to use the religious diplomacy by influencing the Muslim majority countries, the Sunni majority countries rather. Then it is also part of the African countries. Africa has 54 FIFA member countries, and most African countries play football. Africa, so Saudi is doing the sports diplomacy, stadium diplomacy. Saudi is also trying to, as I earlier said, that it is investing in Saudi's manufacturing sector or in infrastructure. So I think Saudi understand that there is a Gulf scramble going on in Africa, and Saudi wants to ensure that it has a good place. It is in a strong position in that battle of influence. And so I think gradually, although it is still limited, Saudi's engagement is still very, very limited in some Muslim-dominated majority countries, very much in Horn of Africa, North Africa, Egypt, and a little bit on West Africa. I think in coming days, you will see more and more Saudi ministers visit in Africa, like Erdogan does a lot of, Erdogan visits a lot of African countries, like Raisi, Iran's minister, was visiting. So I think going forward, we are expected to see more diplomatic exchanges, there the high level visits in both sides, and events like Saudi Africa summit. It was just the beginning, according to me. There will be more Saudi Africa summit focused on, say, energy. So agriculture is very important for Saudi. Saudi is needs Saudi Vision 2030. It says that 96% of the country, it amazes me that as 96% of the country should be urbanized. Now, if 96% of the country is urbanized, where will they cultivate their food?
Yeah.
Where will the food come from? 4% village. So I think there will be more and more increasing dependency. You said about scramble. I think Africa will be in a deciding position, where Saudi will be I think this vision will make Saudi more dependent on Africa for their food needs, and they understand the volatility of geopolitics. So they want to ensure their sustainable relationship with Africa, that some events should not change African position, and instead of sending food to Saudi, they start sending to a competitor country. So Saudi wants to build a very solid and sustainable relationship with Africa. I think we will see how soon the equality will come, I don't know, but yeah, going forward, I think there will be more and more engagement, Saudi engagement with Africa.
Yeah, Samar, thank you very much for this comprehensive response. This is, I agree with you. And again, like Riley said, Africa is no longer seen in terms of your critical assessment of the world scramble. Africa can no longer be seen as not having leverage. Africa has leverage, has a more diversified partnership to partner with, and it depends on how Africa is going to capitalize on that and leverage on that to create. Like you said, everyone has an interest. Like in my own research, I believe everyone has interest. Nobody does. It's not altruistic. Nobody does charity. So as long as those interests can align and they can have a way to create a kind of like fair and balanced relationship, it's a win-win situation. But anyways, we eventually did it. we're supposed to have this podcast, I think, on the Monday. We had mix up with this, but eventually we've done it, and I really enjoyed the conversation. I say thank you.
Are you going to edit? So now that we are talking about person, you are
no,
going to
we edit? Don't. We try not to edit unless there's the but we try. I try to just make sure it's uncensored, and But
so this part will not be part of the podcast, right?
It will be part of it. We say our podcast is very conversational, but we can take it. It's very conversational. We like it to be that way. So
okay. Yeah, so, thank you. I think it was a very important topic. I think first of all, you identified a very important topic, and I'm an Afro optimist. I believe in Africa, and I think it is time that Africa goes from policy taker to policy maker, from narrative. The decisions are being made. We did not speak during the conversation. We did not mention about this African Union being part of G20. That also shows, that Africa needs the seat at the high table. Now, everything comes gradually. Africa is now, it got a seat in the high table. And I think the time will come very soon when Africa will make decisions also. It cannot, a continent, the world's most young continent, it's the population, it's going to double by 2050. It is going to be a power that no one can decline. And I don't think the countries are declining, whether it's Saudi, you have chose Saudi, but you can see the countries that are invested in Africa. So I believe in Africa, and I think we are going to have a very good, Africa is going to rise, and we are seeing it more and more.
I agree with you, and I share your optimism. Thank you once again, Samaya, for your very brilliant perspective and insight. And yes, thank you once again. And
thank you, Mikael.
Yes,
thank you.
I say good afternoon to you from here. Good night to you over there in India. And bye. Speak
thank
soon.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye. Thank you, our viewers. As usual, join me to thank Samai Bachira for his very, I really enjoyed this particular episode, for his very incisive and insightful commentary on the South African relations. And I also share his optimism on Africa's rising position, rightfully so, in the global scene. But for now, stay blessed, and I'll see you next week.